You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Best Practices Show. My name is Kirk Barrett, and I am your host. And you're in for a treat today because running a dental practice is hard. Everybody would agree. And hiring the right people is hard. Everyone would agree. So how do we not make these big mistakes? So I've got my great friend David Harris on here, and you're going to love it. This guy is brilliant. So you don't want to miss this. Now, I want to do a couple things before we get started. If you're here for the first time, I want to just say welcome. And a lot of you have joined through our email list through the COVID conference last year. Over 38,000 of you showed up. And so a lot of dental students and young dentists, and just a lot of new people to the ACT Dental community. And so I want to encourage you just to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're listening to this right now on Spotify, just hit the subscribe button below because we don't want you to miss anything. You'll see every single week we're going to show you or show up and bring a brand new key influencer in dentistry just like we are today, bring you some great tips to improve your practice and improve your life. So make sure you subscribe. Also, if you haven't joined us in the private Facebook community, join us over there. Best Practices powered by ACT Dental, where there's over 13,000 of you in there. Just, it's awesome because everybody's just helping each other. And when it comes to challenges that you have in your dental practice, you're going to see there's a great community of people over there that are just committed to helping each other. And then lastly, if you're just struggling with your practice, you're not sure what to do, we've got amazing resources. We're a coaching company, so we help dentists and coach them on a lot of different things. You can check out ACT Dental U at actdental.com. You can also show up for our events this Friday. We have Katrina Sanders. It's amazing. You'll see we've just got a great lineup of great resources. And if you need somebody to just talk to about your practice, we're here to help in any respect, any way. And we love it to help you create a better practice and a better life. Lastly, we take a lot of show notes here. So you're going to see after this show is over, I'm going to hand it over to our writers and our writers will write up all the show notes. So make sure you visit back to wherever you consume this podcast from. And you're going to see all the links that David gives us and what we talk about. It's going to be linked right in the show notes, how to contact David, all of it. I just want to make sure that this is the easiest learning you ever do. So make sure you check out the show notes. Now, I want to introduce my friend, David. I've known you for quite a while now. You and I have gotten to know each other through the speakers network in dentistry, and I consider you one of the sharpest human beings ever. Like, I actually think, you know, you and I have fun on webinars. I was on your webinar. You've been on the show before. I love what I do. I think what you do is one of the hardest things ever. If people haven't met you, I want them to meet you. What do you do? And let's start there, and then we'll get into the topic. What do you think?
You bet. I think I've got the coolest job in dentistry because my company and I spend all day chasing down the people who steal from dental practices. We're mostly talking about staff embezzling, Kirk, but you know, it could be other things too. We deal sometimes with doctors stealing from each other in group practices, for example. So I guess you could say I thrive on the misery of others. That's not true. I really thrive on taking dentists who are in a bad place and helping them.
Yeah. And you do an excellent job of that. Today, we're going to be talking about how to avoid making the worst hiring mistake of your life. Now, before we get into the details, I always like to start with the why. Like, why is this such an important topic now more than ever? I have a sense of why it's the why, but why is this topic so important from your perspective?
It's important because right now people are in a good place to reposition themselves in terms of their HR. COVID has created some chances for people to trade up in staff, to get better staff, to maybe get rid of that one or two pieces of deadwood in the practice. There's a lot of hiring going on right now. Some practices also, I think, downsized because of COVID, and now they're getting busier and sort of getting back to their sort of traditional staff complement as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, this is just a good time to reevaluate a lot of things. The pandemic we thought was going to end sooner than it has. It's still kind of going on. And I think you're right. I think this is just one of those things where as you age or mature or grow your practice or get back up and have been getting back, you're like, there are some things I don't want anymore, or I want to go and get clearer on this. So, David, take us on this journey. When you say how to avoid making the worst hiring mistake of your life, what do you mean?
Well, let's get right to the pain point. If you put 100 dentists in a room, Kirk, and you ask them how many of you enjoy hiring staff, I'd be very surprised if anything more than about two hands went up.
Right.
Dentists hate this job. And like any job that you hate, when a shortcut magically appears in front of you, you're really tempted to take it. And, you know, that gets you into trouble when you're clearing snow off the roof of your house and you take shortcuts. And it equally gets you in trouble when you hire staff. And what I want to do is talk about some of those shortcuts and how they get you into trouble. And let's be clear on my perspective. I told the audience a few minutes ago, what I do is I chase crooks in dentistry. And one of the things that I get to see happen is those people get fired from a practice for embezzling. And, you know, magically, 2 weeks later, they're working more or less across the street. And the people who just fired them are sitting there watching this and wondering, how the heck did that happen? The reality is that most dentists make hiring decisions with less information than they should have. And the part that should get their attention is that in most cases, that information is right there in front of them, and they just either didn't realize that it would help them or didn't realize how easy it was to get full information so that they can make a good decision.
Yeah. But David, I own a dental practice. I don't have time for all this, you know, and I just lost a great team member up front. I'm trying to find somebody else. I met somebody through an interview, like,
and she's perfect.
And she's perfect. You know, yeah. She talks the lingo. You know what? I don't have time for this. I need somebody to fill. I mean, we've all been there. And
yeah.
You know, the value of hiring the wrong person is very costly.
Yeah. And in time and dollars.
Right.
You know, whenever anybody says to me, I don't have time to do this job properly, I say to them, okay, let's just for a minute think about the amount of your time that an embezzler is going to take. And, you know, if you talk to any dentist who's been embezzled, it's hundreds of hours. So, you know, if you want to play the HR lottery and kind of hire people blindly in the hope that they turn out okay, you know, when you're wrong, and I'm going to say when here as opposed to if, you're going to dump a lot more time into that than it ever would have taken you to vet this person properly at the beginning.
Right.
I'm going to give what to me is a staggering statistic to your audience, Kirk.
Okay.
About 70 million Americans. So that's one in four adults has a criminal record.
Wow. Like, define criminal record. 70 million?
70 million. Now, you know, sometimes this is a marijuana possession from 20 years ago in a state where it's now legal. You know, not necessarily every criminal record is an obstacle to hiring somebody. But it's information you should have so that you can then decide whether a specific criminal record poses a threat to your practice.
Right. Now, I'm joking.
Bad things happen when you don't know. You know, if you see that somebody has a record, you can decide, well, that's not, you know, it was a long time ago. There wasn't a pattern. It wasn't a financial crime. Therefore, it doesn't pose a threat to my practice. But the bad idea is not having that information.
Right. So let's start with, I want to ask this question because you and I have talked about this in public forums, you know, in dentistry. It's fascinating to me the number of dentists that don't do criminal background checks. I mean, yeah. I've got a friend who owns a juicing company. They do background checks on all of their employees, and they just, some of them work in the warehouse.
They take fruit and grind it up and hand it to people.
Yes.
I mean, you know, we're entrusting dental practice employees with money, with protected health information, with sharp instruments. You know, we just need to know a little bit more about them than traditionally dentists do. And, you know, let's not think that criminal records check is the only part of this either. It astounds me. It absolutely astounds me that dental practices don't drug test people when they hire them. And, you know, dentistry has allowed itself to get out of step with how the rest of America hires.
Right.
I can't get a job with FedEx delivering the junk people buy on Amazon without a drug test. Mm-hmm. And yet I can get a job in virtually any dental practice in the US. And I will just point out the really obvious, FedEx doesn't have prescription pads in every delivery van.
True.
I mean, when you hire people in a dental practice, and I don't care what corner of dentistry you practice in, you know, it's tempting to say, well, I'm an orthodontist and we don't really prescribe narcotics. That's probably true, but you could.
Yeah.
And if I'm a druggie, the best places I can work are like an oral surgery practice or maybe a perio practice that does a lot of implants because, you know, prescriptions fly out of those places like candy leaves my house on Halloween.
Right. Now, I got to ask you, so our good friend Deepak is on, and Deepak always asks great questions. Yeah, so he asked the question, how should we embark on doing a criminal background check? Like, where do you even start with that?
Yeah, it's really easy. And all you have to do is hire a local private investigator to do it. And they have access to the court records and stuff. What makes doing criminal records checks a little bit challenging is that somebody's criminal record could reside in any of 50 states plus Puerto Rico plus, you know, Guam. So there's unfortunately, and I get asked this question by dentists a lot, there's no website you can go onto and pay $50 and have it reliably tell you whether or not somebody has a criminal record.
Right.
So this is something where you need access to databases that you just will not have. So private investigators do them. There are also a couple of people in the dental space who do background checks. There's, for example, I can think of a lady in Maryland who used to be a dental hygienist who got her private investigator license, and she will do these for people. So you have some options, but unfortunately, it's just not something you can do yourself and go to some website and get the answer.
Okay, so that's the background check. What about the drug test?
In any decent sized city, there are labs that do this. And what happens is that you make an appointment for the applicant to go to the lab. They will be fairly closely supervised. I mean, the labs know what they're doing. And, you know, they'll make sure that you're not bringing in your sister's urine for, you know, to pass the drug test. You know, it's typically done by urine only. There are very few drug tests that require blood as well. Almost everything can be done from urine. So they take the sample and then you have the results.
And then circumventing.
I won't say it's impossible, but as I say, it's, you know, these folks do this as a business. They're pretty good at it. You know, they will send you into a room where you're not, of course, directly supervised, but they, you know, they know what's in the room. And I don't think most people are going to be able to beat it.
Okay. Well, let's go back to the topic now, because, you know, we're not here to invoke fear or like create any. I love a great team that has a lot of trust with great team members, but that just doesn't happen. It happens through great processes, having a lot of clarity. And I want to go back to the topic. So when we talk about how to avoid making the worst hiring mistake of your life, let's say I'm a young dentist, I'm 32, I'm watching this, David. I'm like, I totally get what you're saying, but where do I start? Like, give me a simple process so I don't go down that place.
Let's start a little bit further back than most people do. One thing that every dentist in the audience understands is the concept of a short notice list for patients. And the thing that I'll suggest to these folks is, let's apply the same kind of thinking to staff. In other words, one of the mistakes that a lot of people make is that they're hiring in a hurry. The reason that they're hiring in a hurry is that somebody leaves on short notice, and then the poor doctor is starting from zero and trying to build a relationship with somebody that they're going to hire and do it all within 48 hours. And that's never a good idea. So in your life, when you meet people who you think might be a good fit for your practice, and you can meet them in all kinds of different places, let's start keeping track of that. Let's make a file somewhere of people I'd like to hire. And you know, you're out on Friday night and you for dinner somewhere, and your food server's terrific, and this person makes you feel great about the experience and you leave a big tip. Let's go one step further and hand that person a business card and say, you know what, you're terrific at what you do. And if you never wanted to change jobs, I'd understand. On the other hand, if you're looking for some daytime hours and maybe a little bit less time on your feet, I'd love to talk to you about working in my dental practice, and hand them a card. And it's a little bit more challenging when you're trying to fill a hygiene or an assisting position or an associate dentist, because they all need certain qualifications and you can only hire them from certain places. But if your front desk is well organized, and if you have some cross training going on and some depth, you really should be able to bring somebody into your practice who didn't spend their whole adult life in dentistry. And Kirk, I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm pretty sure I know how you're going to answer it. Would you rather hire people who have the right personality and not necessarily all the knowledge they need, or hire somebody who knows everything they need to know, but the personality isn't right?
Oh, no question. No question. You're always looking for the things you can't train, you know, like you can't train attitude. You can't train, you know, a growth mindset for the most part. So
you can't make an introvert into an extrovert.
Right.
So, you know, if we have to choose, and most times we do, between personality and knowledge, personality should win. Knowledge wins in a couple of narrow circumstances. One is that, again, we're doing this in a panic. If we're hiring somebody and it's Thursday and they've got to be sitting at the chair Monday morning, we have no choice. We have to hire for knowledge. If we're hiring and we have no ability to train, we have no documentation, the staff we have aren't cross-trained, now again, we have to hire for knowledge, and a lot of times you'll end up with somebody who isn't the personality you want simply because you got forced into a prioritization. So the thing that gives you the most flexibility is to have the ability not to have to do this in a panic. And how do you do that? As I said, you need to be always looking at people and saying, would that person fit in my practice? One of my team members, whose name is Amber Weber, who Kirk knows, Amber said, you know, when you're going to Walmart and you're buying a bunch of things, you have a minute and a half or 2 minute interaction there with a cashier. Think of it like a job interview for them. You know, how did they handle me? Walmart isn't necessarily the place that we want to go to hire all of our staff, but you spend a couple of minutes there with somebody, and at the end of that couple of minutes, you have a pretty good idea about what kind of personality they have. So, of course, you're checking out and you're buying whatever you buy at Walmart, but there's an opportunity there that I think a lot of people miss.
Yeah. Absolutely. But David, you know, again, I hear all these things all day long. You know, there's nobody in my market. You don't understand, like, easy for you to say. Yeah. We put an ad out there, people don't answer it. You know, like, there are times where we're just using temps for months and months and months. Yes. So I see both sides of it. Like, I understand what you're saying. We've got to have great processes in place, but there's nobody out there. What do you say?
Well, I say again, when you restrict yourself to hiring from dentistry, which is the place a lot of dentists end up for a whole bunch of reasons, when you do that, then you've taken whatever size the applicant pool might have been and you divide it by 10. Yeah. So I think our mode at the front desk needs to be, we need to create an environment where somebody who is smart and who has the right attributes can come in here and be functional in a fairly short period of time. And, you know, one thing I'll mention is there are companies out there that are intended for you to outsource your insurance stuff to. And, you know, whether this is the right fit for all dentists all the time or not is probably something that would be a matter of good debate. But that is the most technical part of the front desk job.
Right.
So, you know, maybe that's something we look at outsourcing. And when you do that, you know, hiring somebody off the street becomes a lot more feasible. And again, whether it's a permanent outsourcing or just something you do to bridge a period of time when you need that kind of help is something every practice owner can decide for themselves. But in times when you find the applicant pool small, we want to find every reason we can not to make it smaller.
Right. So let's introduce a few more complications to this.
Yeah.
Even when the pool's, so I agree, like looking outside of dentistry, because most of the people that are watching, if you're committed to CE, you like things the way you like them, you know, so you don't really want somebody else's past experiences in your practice. But David, you know, some of these people are really good interviewers, like, you know, and that's why they won't let me interview here anymore. I'll hire people. And I'll go, who'd you hire? I'm like, she's great. And they go, what does she do? I don't know. She's,
I don't know.
She's awesome. And yeah. Like, they asked her why she'd be good at the job. And like, she's so confident. People are really good interviewers now.
Sure, right? They are. Yeah. And a couple of things happen there. First of all, you need, before you start interviewing people, you need to sit down and say, what do I really want? And I'm not talking here about, you know, I'm looking to hire a dental assistant to work in a perio practice. What skills, what personality, and really to the point, what weaknesses are you looking for them to compensate? So if you're a dentist who really despises talking money with patients, and I know you're out there, then when we hire, for example, a financial coordinator, that really needs to be their strong point. So a little bit of introspection helps a lot. If you don't nail that stuff down first, then you do what Kirk just said. You end up hiring people that you like as opposed to people who have the skill sets. Yeah. So you got to go into the process with a pretty firm idea of what you want to come out with.
Right.
That's the first thing. The second thing that I find a lot of dentists do, Kirk, is they fall into the trap of asking questions to which there are obvious answers. Do you mind working evenings? Mm-hmm. Okay. If you want the job, there's only one possible answer to that question. No, I don't.
Wait. How are you with people?
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you with people?
Well, you know, everybody likes me. Or give me, you know, tell me three of your strengths and three of your weaknesses. And anybody who's been coached on how to do a good interview will give weaknesses that are really hidden strengths.
Like, you know, I'm impatient. I want things done right now.
Sometimes I just set my standards way too high and then I kill myself trying to reach them. So, you know, that we got to get out of the mode of the predictable question. The thing I like best for assessing how somebody's going to be on the job is role play. So you give them a situation. It's a situation that would be common to their job. And then you see how they do. So you're hiring an assistant, for example. Here's a role play you could use. You and the assistant are sitting with a patient. You just told that patient that they need $7,000 worth of dental work. And you have to go do a hygiene check. So you leave the operatory and the patient turns to the assistant and says, do I really need this stuff or is the doctor just trying to pay for her boat?
Right.
And see what somebody says. Now, the caution I'll give the audience is if somebody is applying to be a dental assistant and they've been a dental assistant for 15 years, they should have a much better answer than somebody who got out of assisting school last week and has never actually seen this question. So you need to temper your evaluation by how much experience somebody's had in the position. If somebody who's been an assistant for 15 years kind of looks down at their feet and stumbles when you give them that role play, that's not what I would expect.
Yeah.
The objective of the interview process and the other screening that we're going to talk about in a second is to get to know this person and to understand what they're good at and what they're not. And you don't learn much by asking them questions with predictable answers. Put them on the spot. Give them that role play and see how they do. And that's a stressful situation. I mean, it's stressful as hell to be in an interview and have somebody, you know, make you play act.
Right.
But if somebody can't do that, it's very unlikely that they're going to be able to do it in the job.
Right. Now, Deepak, we should just bring him on as another co-host because he asks the best questions. He's got another one for you, David. To your point, you know, we once saw a great employee in retail and hired her. After some time, she changed and became problematic and actually stole from us by manipulating her timesheet. Yeah. Can you speak to that unexpected employee performance change and address that?
I absolutely can. And, you know, that can happen in any situation. And we've seen embezzlers who worked in a practice for 20 years, you know, and for the first 15 years or 18 years, they were an ideal employee. And then they woke up one morning and they said, well, you know, retirement is looming up on me and my 401k is not very big. And there's no pension plan in the dental practice where I work. So I got to do something. There are lots of reasons, Deepak, why people change. And, you know, sometimes it's something you do that sort of sets them off. Sometimes it's something in their own life. And there's not much that the hiring process can do about those people. You know, most times, and maybe in the situation you laid out, that's not a hiring mistake per se. It's a failure to observe staff once you hire them. Most of the time when changes like that happen, they're visible at some level. I mean, there's something overt that they're doing that makes you say, you know, that seems out of character for the way that I know that employee. So hiring doesn't mean that people will never change. Hiring properly doesn't mean that people will never change. You know, the mistakes, though, that I see people make are they hire what we refer to as serial embezzlers, you know, and these people have stolen before, and obviously the person hiring them doesn't know that. And 3 months later, they're back at it again. And that's the one you can protect from hiring.
Yeah.
So great question, and maybe a topic for another day. But, you know, the reality is that dentists hire people without knowing as much about them as they should. And I'll give you a couple more things that we should not miss. Right. I won't hire anybody without having a look at what they do in social networking.
Okay, wait, we go a little deeper in that. So, Yes. Okay.
I want to see what's happening on their Facebook page. And a lot of people have their Facebook pages kind of locked down now. So what I tell an applicant is, I'm going to send you a friend request. I need you to accept it so that I can look at your social networking. 24 hours from now, if you want, you're free to unfriend me and I won't have a problem with that, but I want to have a look. So Facebook, LinkedIn, if they have a LinkedIn profile, Instagram, you know, there's lots of other social networking out there you could look at, but if we're talking about a millennial, probably Instagram is going to be the best place to look. And if we're talking about somebody who's sort of post-millennial hood, then Facebook is likely where it's at. So what am I looking for there? Well, a few things. One of the things I look at very quickly is time of day when they're posting. And really what I want to know, Kirk, is are they a time thief? If this is a person who's posting on social media during working hours, then what's happening in the office they're working in is there are a whole bunch of other people scurrying around doing their work while, you know, they're taking this extended bathroom break and catching up with their friends.
I never thought of that. Like, that is awesome. The friend request, time of post, what else should I be looking for?
Like, well, one thing I look at is really strongly held political beliefs. And, you know, I'm not questioning people's rights to vote for who they want and support who they want politically. But if they're posting, again, really strong stuff online, then what I wonder is, are they going to bring it into the office? You know, and let's talk about something that's kind of topical today, QAnon. People who are sort of QAnon believers have pretty strongly held beliefs, and I just don't want that going on in my office. So that's one, that's another thing that I look at. A huge red flag is anti-employer sentiment. You know, somebody who's bashing their current employer is going to do that to you next.
Yep.
And, you know, we all understand how important online reputation is in dentistry, and we just don't want somebody who will express that. Another thing I look at is, you know, how well they express themselves, how they communicate with other people. You know, is this somebody who flames people? You know, do they sort of talk at a level of articulation below what we want? You have to assume that somebody's resume and cover letter, you know, if somebody's not gifted with the ability to communicate well, hopefully they know that and their resume and cover letter reflect a higher standard of communication because they've had some help. Well, nobody gets help with their Facebook posting. So it's a chance for us to see kind of how they'll be communicating if we hire them and decide if you like it or not.
That is excellent. I never even thought of that. You know, another thing, and I know you're probably going to get into this, but you're really good at noticing the things that aren't there. Because a lot of times in hiring, you're looking at the things that are there. And I remember you saying this a while back, and I can't remember where this was. Like, even the resume, you look, don't look at what's on the resume, look at what's not on the resume. Can you speak to that?
I sure can. Let's say that I work for Dr. A for 5 years, and either I'm not embezzling or I am, and Dr. A doesn't catch me. And eventually I leave that job and I go to work for Dr. B. And after 6 months, he catches my hand in the cookie jar and he fires me. And now I'm applying at your practice. I'm okay with you speaking with Dr. A because she thinks I'm great. But if you have a conversation with Dr. B, I won't get the job. So I need to do something that prevents you from calling Dr. B. And there are a lot of possibilities. You know, one thing I could do is give a fake phone number for Dr. B that actually is a disposable cell phone that my uncle will keep for me. And when the phone rings, he'll pretend to be Dr. B and give me a great reference. So first takeaway is don't phone any phone number that an applicant gives you. If you're going to check with Dr. B, and I really think you must, Google's really cheap to use. Go online, find the phone number, call that number. The second thing I could do is I could just leave Dr. B off my resume. And how do I do that? Well, it's one of two things. I could do what's called the stretch. I said I'd worked for Dr. A for 5 years. If I change the employment dates to be 5 years and 6 months, then I can kind of make Dr. B disappear. So when we're phoning people, and my rule is very simple, I need you to phone everybody who has employed this person in the past 5 years. when I get Dr. A on the phone, what I need to do is confirm dates of employment and get exact dates, not approximate dates, exact dates. What was this person's start date? What was their end date? And compare those to the resume. The next thing I need to do is I need to look at gaps in employment, because the other option is I pretend I never worked for Dr. B. You know, I was traveling through Europe, or I was home with my children or something. So when somebody says that to you, what you say next is great. I just need to verify that. So you were traveling through Europe, bring your passport in.
Right.
And
there's people that aren't lying and telling the truth. They're like, I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah. You know?
So wait, go back to the dates thing. Cause
Again,
that's why they won't let me hire here is like when I would call, I'd be like, hey, would you know, I know you can't ask really specific questions, but one of the questions we're always trained to ask is, would you hire this person again? And you listen very carefully to their answer, but I never thought you want to confirm exact dates. And let's go into the why, because if you're looking at a resume and they give you the wrong dates that are on the there's a pretty good chance that that's just the tip of the iceberg, right?
Yeah, wrong resume dates is a showstopper. As soon as you see that, you got to walk away. You know there's a problem. And again, Kirk, don't make the mistake a lot of dentists make. They get the former employer on the phone and they say, this person says she worked for you from January of 2018 to October of 2020. Because if you say that to any human, they will all say the same thing. Yeah, that sounds about right. What you need to do is ask the open-ended question. What was this person's start date and what was their last day with you? And the other good question to ask that's kind of along the same lines is, and what was their final position with you? Because we know this, a lot of people will give themselves that upgrade to first class.
Yep.
And the way the upgrade works is, you know, they were a receptionist in their last position, but they're applying at your office now. And what does their resume say their last position was?
Office manager.
So if they're lying about that before they've even started work for you, all hell is going to break loose when you hire them.
Wow. I've already failed at most of this. Okay, so... what other questions, you know, besides the cliche normal questions you ask, what other questions should you be asking when you're doing homework on former employees or employees?
Well, you nailed it. The one question I want answered, and I will pester the crap out of people till they answer it, is would you rehire this person? You know, and if I get the sense, Kirk, that I'm dealing with somebody who's sort of a very linear thinker, sometimes I'll phrase that question even a little more specifically. If you had a position that this person was suitable for, and if they were available, would you rehire them? Because sometimes that'll take away the sort of prevarication that sometimes people will have.
Right.
Be specific with the question. The beautiful thing about that question, and I know Kirk knows this, but let's say what you and I are both thinking to the audience. The beautiful thing about that question is anything other than yes, of course, in a minute means no.
Right.
And
I love these conversations. You said the absence of absolutely yes is a no in one of our previous conversations, right? Go deeper in that.
Okay. So, and let's give the audience a tip. Let's put the shoe on the other foot. Let's say that you just fired somebody and maybe it was embezzlement. Maybe it was the hygienist who used the same Profi cup all day. And the correct response from the audience is yuck. But you just fired somebody and you get a call from somebody who is asking for a reference check. Here's how you do it. You say to that person, I will confirm their dates of employment and I'm only going to answer one other question. And that question is, would you rehire this person? So whoever's calling you is going to say, okay, Kirk, I'll play your stupid game. Would you rehire this person? And you would say, not in 100 million years, or, you know, not until bananas start growing in Milwaukee, or however you want to put it. But you will convey that under no circumstance that you could imagine would you ever rehire this person. So it's easy if somebody gives you that answer. But if you ask somebody this question and you get 3 seconds of silence, that's a no. If the person at the other end of the phone would rehire this person, they will have no hesitation whatsoever in saying it. It's when they're choosing their words carefully, or they just come right out and say, no, hell would freeze over first. Those mean the same thing.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say. Like, this is such great thinking on this. Now, I have a million other questions and I want to stick to the topic, but again, Deepak, man, you just asked the best.
Okay. Bring it on.
Like, okay. So first of all, let's talk about the due diligence when you hire somebody.
Yeah.
And then the probationary period, how long should it be? What do we look for? How often and how specifically do we speak to these deficiencies?
Well, you know, if you're in one of the 49 states that is an employment at will state, theoretically, your probationary period is infinite. Unless we're talking about an employee who's in a protected class, or unless your firing is discriminatory, in a legal sense, your probationary period is infinite. Having said that, I think it's beneficial to the employment relationship that both you and the employee have an official probationary period. Probably 3 months is good. I should talk, though, a little bit about sequencing as well, because, you know, we talk about things like looking at social networking and drug testing and so on. Here's how I would structure the hiring process. I encourage you to think of it as a funnel, and you want to attract the largest number of qualified applicants that you can. From there, you want to start narrowing down. And the first thing I'll say is you want people who are really unsuitable to separate themselves as early in the process as you can. Why? Because that stops you from investing time and energy, for example, in interviewing somebody who's unsuitable. So the way the pipeline works, start by setting up a couple of arbitrary rules. And the kind of thing that I'm talking about here is when we hire, I always have a reference number, and I tell people to quote that reference number in the cover letter. I make the reference number up. It means absolutely nothing, but I get two kinds of applications in. I get some who quote the reference number and some who don't. The ones who don't, I throw away immediately because they can't follow instructions. Okay? It's really simple. It's the easiest test in the world, and you will end up throwing out 30% of the applications because of it. And that's the easiest screen there is. Another thing that somebody suggested to me the other day, and I absolutely love this idea, require people to record a brief video and send it to you as part of their application.
Yes.
That does a couple of things. It weeds out people who can't use computers. And in my mind, you cannot function effectively in a dental practice if you can't handle the basics on a computer. And you're setting just a little obstacle there. And people who really aren't motivated for the job just won't bother. One of the things I hear a lot from people trying to hire people these days is called ghosting. And ghosting means somebody sets up an interview and they don't show up. And one of the easiest ways to stop ghosting is to make people just a little bit invested in the process. You know, if somebody sends you in a resume, and let's face it, a resume can go to a lot of places, so there's not a whole lot of work involved for the applicant there. Somebody sends you a resume and you phone them back and say, great, I'd like to have an interview. It's the easiest thing in the world for them to say yes. They have zero investment in your process at that point.
Right.
So the video is good. The other thing I suggest is you need an application form. And there are several reasons for this. First of all, it helps you standardize information. I mean, one of the hard things when you have 20 different resumes is comparing them and sort of not being overly influenced by the one who has the prettiest resume. When you use an application form, everything gets homogenized and everybody's coming to you on the same basis, and it's a lot easier to compare. That application form is also your chance to first of all, obtain people's consent for the background checking that you're going to be doing. Because a lot of the things you're going to do require written consent. And it's also your chance to let people know what the process is going to be. In other words, you should let people know very early on that you will be drug testing. And what that means is people who know they're not going to pass your drug test are going to exit from the process.
Yeah, I love that. Standardizing your own forms, or you can create a type form on the internet or whatever. But also too, like I've got most of these things wrong that you've said. I actually passed the test on the video thing. We started doing that a couple of years ago, and that is huge because you're right. It does weed the number of candidates, but the few that you get, you're like, wow, this is a go-getter.
Yeah.
We really want the job.
Yeah. Personality comes out there. And like I say, you can look at that 2-minute video and say, nah, that one's not what I want. And it's a whole lot easier to do that than to waste a half hour interview on them. It has happened to all of us. You know, we're interviewing somebody and we know 2 minutes after we sit down that they're not right. And, you know, then, I mean, what do? You go through the rest of the interview with them because you feel like it would be discourteous to do otherwise. I mean, they've, you know, taken the trouble to get dressed up and come down to your practice. So you end up sitting there for somebody with half an hour and you just know it's not going to work. So the video is a way of, as I say, putting a little hurdle in front of them. And also, you know, if you can invest 2 minutes in your pajamas looking at a video and decide either, you know, I want to go the next step with this person, or I don't want to go the next step with this person, that's a huge time saver.
Yeah, I love I'm a big fan of all those things. I had an office in North Carolina and another one that was in Georgia. When it came to answering the phone in their offices, they set up a Google phone number. And the first hurdle was call and leave a message why you'd be a good candidate to answer. And you know how this goes. I'd be great working. Like if they can't leave a great message about why they'd be good on your phones, you know, on your phone, what do you think they're going to do on your phones when they work there for a long time? I love the obstacles thing.
Yeah. Well, let's put somebody to a little bit of work. And right. Then if they're not invested, again, we may as well know that now.
That's great. What other items, you know, Deepak already chimed in. He said, hey, I love what Mr. Harris is saying about setting obstacles, and we've got to have you back on. We will definitely do that and get more into the geeky financial aspects of fraud detection. But again, let's go back to the framework of how not to make these mistakes. Any other big items you'd say this is a must?
Yeah. So let's go back to sequencing. And you know, you're going to gather resumes first. You're going to put some little obstacles and little tests in place so that you can weed out. The other weed out for me, and I kind of touched on it a few minutes ago, typos, bad grammar, anything like that in the resume or the cover letter to me is an automatic rejection. Why? Because we need to assume that that's the best written work that somebody's capable of. And if it doesn't meet your standard, what they do every day sure as heck will not. The same for how people are dressed when they show up in an interview. You know, if they show up in the tank top and the hair a mess and they look like they just rolled out of bed for an interview, the way they show up for work is going to be somewhat lower standard, if that's possible, than how they show up for the interview. So the same way you judge the professionalism of somebody's appearance when they come to an interview, you should apply that same standard to their written communication with you to get to that point. I mean, I had a resume and cover letter come in. This was about a year and a half ago. And it was somebody who had experience investigating dental embezzlement. And they thought an interview would be just about automatic, you know, but their written self-expression was so bad. And I just turned them down flat. You know, I just kind of hoped they would let it go at that. But they actually persisted, say, you know, and they said, I don't understand why I didn't get an interview here. You know, this was somebody who in written correspondence to me would use the letter U instead of Y-O-U, for example. And you know, they sort of talked in Donald Trump half sentences. You know, I... I hadn't really intended to say anything to them, but when they brought it up, I said, you know what? We are judged predominantly by our written communications, and you have shown me that you just cannot communicate at the standard that we have for ourselves.
Right.
And I'm sorry, but you're not suitable. And I told her that, which I'm sure wasn't an easy message for her, but she kind of persisted. At the front desk of a dental practice, you know, verbal communication is probably more of what's done, but it's so important. And, you know, people who just can't talk to other people or who can't generally communicate with other people are going to send out an impression about your practice that I'm sure is not what you want.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Yeah, and I'll go back to what I said at the beginning. Like, this is not easy stuff. This is probably the hardest stuff you'll ever do in your whole entire career is finding, keeping, attracting, growing the right type of people. And getting there, you have to live 9 lives. You know, we've heard the old adage, you know, dentists hire too quickly and they fire too slowly in some respects. But everybody knows how expensive a bad hire is. And when it's a really bad hire, it's crazy expensive.
It's hard too, because, you know, it's enough of a challenge to find somebody with the right personality and with whatever skill set you need them to have. That's a challenge. And then when you have to overlay on top of that, the stuff I'm talking about, which is, well, what if they're not telling me the whole story, or what if what they're telling me isn't true? It becomes very challenging. But let's go back to our funnel. So we start with the hurdles. Then from the people who pass the basic hurdles, we decide who we want to interview. And from those, we're going to get down to the one we want to hire. And the things like the criminal records check and the drug test and the social networking screen really should only get applied to one person. So you found the chosen one. And then the question really is, well, what if what this person is telling me isn't accurate? And that's where criminal records check, speaking with former employers, all that kind of stuff plays in. You will drive yourself crazy if you play what I call interview survivor. An interview survivor means, you know, you're doing drug tests on 10 people, and the one who comes back the cleanest you hire.
Right. Well, this makes perfect sense, and I'm glad how you laid that. I mean, by law, you have to do it the same way every time. And so we're doing all of the, you know, the heavy lifting at the bottom instead of like all at the top type of a thing.
Yeah. Again, if you think of the funnel, we really want to get down to one person and then apply the somebody called due diligence, apply the due diligence to them. Let me talk about a few other due diligence items that should be in place. The first one, which is so obvious, but, you know, gets shortcutted. If somebody's being looked at for a credentialed position, so they're an assistant, a hygienist, or an associate, or I guess conceivably a dental therapist in some states, we need to verify that they have that credential. We cannot simply accept a piece of paper from them, because paper's not worth the paper it's printed on anymore. I mean, forgery is pretty easy in 2021. And there's a diploma or two behind me on the wall. I mean, if I was a little motivated, I could have made any of those. So let's not fall into that trap. And the good news is that most credentialing bodies have their listings online, so you can go and verify. We also need to check photo ID. And if you don't do that, you may end up hiring somebody whose sister is a hygienist as a hygienist. And the time to check photo ID is when you interview people. If you hire somebody, they know there's going to be an I-9 form coming. They know there's going to be an identification check then, so they'll be ready. The trick is to catch them when they're not ready. So when you're interviewing somebody, you say to them, I just need to check your driver's license or some other piece of government ID. And I also need a secondary piece of ID, you know, which could be a gym membership or a library card or whatever, a credit card. But I need to check those now. And the person who says to you, well, I didn't bring them with me. You know, I kind of wonder why any adult would wander around town without,
right,
you know, a credit card and a driver's license. You know, so if what they're telling me is true, I'm sort of questioning them, and I'm very open at that point to the possibility that this person is trying to hide some baggage by pretending to be somebody else.
Right.
So, you know, we should do that at the first time we meet them, not after we've already hired them. And, oh, by the way, I need to check your ID, because at that point they know that's coming and they're ready. If you have a record, in most states, it's a felony to carry false ID. So people don't do that lightly. And, you know, we want to catch people sort of with their pants down.
Yeah. Now, any other piece? Now, Deepak, I did ask another question, which I absolutely love, which is this one. Okay, so let's say I get down to the one.
Yeah.
We verify all this other stuff. And what are your thoughts about involving other staff in the interview process?
I love it. You know, my suggestion, Deepak, is have the staff take this person out to lunch. You know, give them your credit card, and it doesn't have to be all 10 of your staff, but, you know, at least a couple of them. Take this person out to lunch and, you know, come back and report to me after. And a lot of times, somebody who puts up a really good front with you, who's been well coached with interviewing, you know, gets taken out by the staff, and, you know, they will either say something to the staff that they would never say to you, or, you know, they have the two beers at lunch, which would definitely give me a whole lot of concern.
Right.
But yeah, you know, not always. I mean, some people understand that, you know, if I'm putting on an act and I've got to just stay in my costume for a little while longer, but some will fall out of it. And yeah, you can learn a lot from that conversation, from what your staff tell you about what happened.
Yeah. Very good stuff. So I know we don't get you much longer here, and I'm going to have you back on other topics over and over and over again. But what other components would you say are non-negotiables that you encourage the listeners so that they avoid making the worst hiring mistakes of their lives? Any last thoughts?
Yeah. One obstacle that you'll run into, and I'll tell you exactly how to transcend it, is somebody says to you, please don't call my current employer because she doesn't know I'm leaving. And there are two possibilities here. One is that this is a legitimate request. The other possibility is this person actually got fired 3 weeks ago, and this is their way of preventing you from calling somebody who just fired them. So let's talk about how we work through this. And it's not terribly hard. What you tell the person who says that to you is, look, I understand completely. And I certainly would never want to get you in trouble with your current employment relationship. But I am going to let you know that we don't hire anybody without speaking with their most recent employer. Now, in understanding the situation you're in, I'm happy to defer that and make it the very last step. But we do have to have that conversation. And what you're doing there is a little exercise in differential diagnosis. If this person really is playing games with you, that'll be it. You will never see them again, because what you've told them is at the end of their pathway lies a brick wall. On the other hand, if this is a legitimate request, you've accommodated. I mean, you've said to this person, I understand where you are, and I will work with that. Again, it's like in the job application form that you're going to build. And that's something, by the way, that you really need some HR help with, just so that you don't stray into asking questions on your form that will take you into discriminatory situations, like asking for somebody's birth date, which you probably can't do, What you can ask them is whether they're between the ages of 18 and 65, which is not discriminatory, but you can't ask for their birth date on the application form. So you need some HR help doing this, but that's your chance again to tell people what scrutiny they're going to be under and let them decide if they're okay with that or not. And those who self-select out are people you didn't want. So I want people to know that a conversation with their current employer is mandatory. But like I say, if somebody comes to you with that request, there's a very specific way you can handle it.
Right. Very well said. I mean, that's so interesting because in the years I've done this, people always say that. Don't call my thought is, well, I might just call and just see if you work there, pick up the phone and then hang up, like just to make sure. But no one ever does that. No one ever checks.
And I'm not sure that's right. I mean, you know, you're hoping to build an employment relationship with this person, and they asked you very specifically not to do something.
Right.
And, you know, if it's a legitimate request and you've done that, I mean, everybody's got call display. They know where you called from. You know, you can get the employee into trouble. And again, they've come to you and said, this is my problem. Please don't call my current employer. So
very well said.
I have an issue with that. You know what? The other answer that dentists come up with is, well, you know, I'll check the website and see if they're still there. But, you know, some dentists are notoriously slow at adjusting their websites if somebody's let go. And, you know, 3 weeks is not out of the question for that.
Yeah. So, your point's spot on. I think the big thing is that we just trust so much what people are saying because you want to.
And of course you do.
I've never even verified people's dates and employments or if they work there or anything like that. But you're helping us think through a process that's really different. And to the topic here, like, just don't make the big mistakes when it comes to hiring.
You know, we saw one embezzler who had worked in 15 different practices and stolen from every one of them. And she was a great interviewer, you know, very polished, resume looked good. She knew how to use the practice management software, and I'll add, in ways that the doctor never imagined. She came well-dressed, well-groomed to the interviews, and the 15 victims, and I will say that word again, 15 victims, had all decided in the interview to hire her and didn't feel the need to probe in any way into her background. I mean, it was all there. She had a criminal record. She had, you know, and by the time she got to number 15, there were 14 other dentists who, if called, would say, run the other way from this woman. And clearly those calls were never made. So those people are out there. She's an extreme example. Irina Fuchs is her name. She also went by other names like Cheryakovsky and a few others. And if you're interested, you can certainly read about her on our website. But there are Irinas out there looking for a gullible dentist. And again, it's hard in the hiring process because there are a bunch of affirmative things you're looking for. And it's really difficult to, at the same time, have the other side of your brain say, you know, and I also need to be wary of certain things. I know it's a big ask, but if you don't do it, you and I will be having a conversation in a whole other context about, you know, how much money she stole from your practice.
Right. Right. David, this is great stuff. And I know we're going to have you back again and again and again on different topics. If somebody's listening to this on iTunes or Spotify or whatever, I know they're going to want to find out more about what you do. I also want you to mention your webinar series that you guys do. So how do I find out more about who you are, what you guys do, all that kind of stuff?
You can go to the same place for all those answers. Our website is www.dentalembezzlement.com. And the only trick there is spelling embezzlement right. But if you come close enough, Google will probably save you. Dentalembezzlement.com. And our website is there. It talks about what we do. We've been in business for 31 years. And I suspect most in the audience know this, but I'll say it anyway. We only work with dentists. So all of our expertise is based on crime committed in dental practices. And we also have a very interesting part of our website called the Hall of Shame, where we profile, 680 embezzlers.
Oh my gosh.
And speaking of due diligence in hiring, it's a really good idea just to have a look at our Hall of Shame before you hire somebody in case they're there. And we get calls fairly regularly from people who say, yeah, I was about to hire somebody and I checked your Hall of Shame and there she was. So add that to your list as well. And you can search by name. We put as many of the pictures as we can there. So, you know, if somebody is using a different name, you can possibly catch them by seeing their picture.
Wow.
So that's a good resource for the audience. We do a once a month webinar. We were absolutely thrilled to have Kirk as our guest last month. And I think that was one of our best ones ever. I mean, we just had such a great dialogue between Kirk and the members of our team. On our website, there's a menu item that says Prosperident Webinars. You can sign up for the next one. You can check out the last one. Kirk's is there on our website where it will live forever. So have a look at the webinars. And if you're interested, I think we've got one every month. We'd love to have you there anytime.
Yeah. No, wait, you got to tell them about your book too. Get your book.
I have a book that is available on Amazon. It's called Dental Embezzlement, The Art of Theft and Science of Control. So if you want to hear some war stories and learn about some things to do in your practice, and there is a chapter on hiring, you can get that on Amazon. It's available in paperback or electronic. Check it out. It's 120 pages. It's not like it'll take you a month to read. I usually tell people three trips to the bathroom should more or less do it, but some people read faster than others.
Might take me more than that. I'm not the best reader, but I do encourage you guys to check it out. So, David, I appreciate this so much, and you've just become a great friend to ACT Dental, and I know we rely on. And this is always, I'll just say this. This is difficult stuff. This is not fun stuff to talk. It's fearful, but we've had it happen. We've had it happen to clients, and the amount of pain it creates when something bad like this happens is... it's emotional pain, it's financial pain, and it lingers on and it really destroys trust. And so the whole purpose of this was not, again, to create any fear, but just to avoid some of the big mistakes. And buddy, I'm so grateful. So thank you so much. And I know I can't wait to have you back, and we're going to cover other topics.
Anytime.
Yeah, so awesome. Well, stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. And thank you guys for watching the Best Practices Show. If you enjoyed today, which I hope you did, just hit the share button. Share this with your friends and colleagues. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you guys want to see on the shows, whether it be from David or other great guests. And you're going to see we're going to line them up. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.